WGN, here's Paul Nolte again, the senior wealth advisor and market strategist for Murphy and Silvest. Paul, are you surprised with what the markets are and are not doing today?
Not really. And it's part of the reason why we use the song "Don't Get Fooled Again" to open up this week. We've seen so many different iterations of the tariff since Liberation Day. Advisors and clients, as well as investors in general, are saying, yeah, okay, we've heard this song before. We're acting a little differently. We haven't seen the reaction in a lot of the economic data yet either. So I think a lot of investors are like, yeah, okay, show me the money. Show me that, you know, this is actually either working, not working, or where the impact is.
Yeah. Well, I'm not looking for trouble here, but maybe the impact, but watch this, but maybe the impact will be felt, but it's not being felt right now. So the markets aren't going to react to it. In other words,
you could probably get yourself hired as Jay Powell's assistant, because that's exactly his stance. We haven't really seen anything yet. So we anticipate that the tariffs are going to be inflationary, but we haven't seen it. So we're just going to keep monetary policy on hold. And, of course, that's not playing well in the White House. But we might see some of that show up in a lot of the earnings numbers that we get over the next 3 weeks or so, because really those all the tariffs came on after April 2nd, which is the second quarter.
So, I'm sorry, you are saying, well, I guess you're reiterating what I said, right? That that it's too soon to judge the impact of tariffs or tariff talk.
Yeah, it's very much similar to rate cuts. They don't get felt right away. It's the long and variable lag that economists love to talk about.
Boy, you would think then if there's a shred of truth to that, then people would be selling soon, if not now, right?
You would think so, but again, you know, we saw the market snap back right away after Trump backed off. So now what you're betting on? Are you betting on tariff impacts? Are you betting on Trump maybe backing away from some of the tariffs? Are you betting on maybe the tariffs not having as great of an impact?
So it's
difficult. And so let me give you, for instance, Japan automakers. They're actually cutting prices so that to the ultimate consumer here in the United States, the price is the same. So the implementation of the tariffs is very different depending upon the company, industry, and then what ultimately is an impact on the consumer.
You have any thoughts about this tariff talk about Russia? The president is sufficiently upset with their continuation of the war in Ukraine and the way they're fighting it, that he's now threatening 100% tariffs. There's a deadline coming up. What's your thought about that?
We'll see. That's his stance is always very demonstrative, and what we've seen so far is he tends to step back from that a little bit. And you have to take a look at, too, how much and what do we import from Russia.
And what is the answer to that? Not as much, right?
Not that much, no. And really the ones that we're most concerned about are Europe, Canada, Mexico, and China. And those are the big four, I think, as far as what are we looking for from each of those. Remember, the tariffs are not trade necessarily. It is to get each of the countries to do something, either reduce their tariffs, to export less fentanyl or whatever. So it's not a trade deal as the way that you and I might think of trade, where you're covering everything in the waterfront. It is very specific to certain items or certain actions that we'd like to see other countries do.
Well, is it possible that we would cut off sales to them rather than put a tax on imports to the United States? What about us not selling or making available to Russia or its allies anything?
You know, it's certainly a possibility. It's not one that I think Trump is entertaining at this point. I think he's looking to direct, you know, the simplistic approach is, okay, we're going to put tariffs on Russia. Do they do anything with the banking system? They've done that in the past where they said, okay, we're just not going to allow certain transactions that may emanate from Russia to to be had. And that's a possibility, too. But I think this is just the first salvo to get a reaction from Putin. And we'll may find something out later this week.
I have questions about the rest of the market as well. Talking to Paul Nolte, the senior wealth advisor and market strategist at Murphy and Silvest. And we're talking about how the markets don't seem to be paying too much attention to tariffs or tariff talks. Is the bond market going to make the decision about what the Fed does, regardless of what the president says or thinks, or the market says or thinks? Is it the bond market that's going to make the call?
I think so, and that's going to be very dependent upon the CPI number, which is due out tomorrow, and then PPI later on this week. The expectation is certainly that inflation is and has been coming down. The wrinkle is that from a year-over-year basis, last June we had very low inflation, so that number comes off and gets replaced with whatever comes out. So if that one's a little bit higher, you could see actually the inflation rate tick up a little bit. But that, I think, is going to direct the bond market as to what to do. And the bond market is a little bit more concerned about the deficit in the bill. So we've seen long bond yields go up a little bit. Short term is still pretty well anchored, but the long bond is what's really moving here.
So when do you think the next rate cut comes?
Our argument is sometime in 2026. We don't think we're going to get one in 25.
Wow.
Well, all right, so I'll turn around the question.
I wasn't arguing with you, Paul.
Why?
Wasn't an argument.
So why would the Fed cut rates? If inflation is running about the target rate, 2, 2.25, maybe 2.5, depending upon what you're looking at, unemployment is at 4.1%, and historically is very low. Why do we have to cut rates?
Well, what are the two charges for the Fed?
Full employment and low inflation.
Say it again.
Full employment and low, stable inflation, low inflation.
Yeah.
They have targeted 2%. That was not a target 20 years ago, but it has become that. And certainly we are at low employment right now. So with the as long as we see new jobs being created in the 135 to 140,000 range, anything above that, the unemployment number should be coming down. Anything below that, the unemployment rate should go up. In that 130 to 140 range, employment is generally stable.
I wonder if the president's criticism, though, has some merit in that don't be too late on this now. You don't want to wait for inflation to start to run away and then you guys are late to the game, or employment to change dramatically and then you wish you had done something sooner.
Well, you know, that has always been the issue with the Fed. And you can go back to Alan Greenspan. Certainly the Fed has tended to be a lot more reactionary to the economic data than anticipatory. And I think part of that is just in their modeling. I mean, we can take a look at different economic models today. And if we were to say, okay, here's the situation, what do you think interest rates would be? And we would all look and go, gosh, interest rates should be a lot higher than what they are today. But here we are. And that's, I don't think the Fed is ever going to get away from that. They will continue to be reactionary as opposed to anticipatory.
What are you telling your clients to do then? Just the average mom and pop investor who wants to retire someday or is in retirement now. Those are two different pools of people. But what are you telling your clients?
You know, in general, we've had very good equity returns over the last couple of years. So our thought process is that the go forward rate of return for the equity markets probably a little below average. So for a lot of our clients, we've tended to be a little bit more in the fixed income market and the bond market than we normally are, and a little less in the stock market, especially technology, than we historically have been as well. Because again, the tech sector has run tremendously here. Expectations are very, very high, and any disappointment, you could see the markets drop easily 10 to 15%.
NVIDIA's back up though. Did you miss some opportunities here of late?
Oh, absolutely. I'm not apologetic. The returns that we've had in the portfolio are still fine and certainly in line with what our clients need to get to 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 retirement and stay in retirement. But yes, I mean, a stock that may be selling at 30 times earnings can easily go to 35 or 40 times earnings on its way to 20. So I think that's the situation that we're in. In some of those companies, it's very similar to the valuations that we saw in the late 90s. We're just not sure what inning we're in yet.
Yeah.
You only know that looking backwards.
Well, isn't that the truth? You know, that's what Terry has been saying. The calculation people need to make is which pain for you would be greater, missing another uptick or being in the game when things go down. And I think a lot of people are saying, y'all can make your last bit of profit, but I'm going to guarantee that I capture what I have. Sounds like that's what you're saying.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'll even point to Alan Greenspan when he said, you know, the market is irrationally exuberant. For 2 years, the market doubled before he was actually proven right. But it was 5 years before he was proven right. So, yes, exactly. It just allows us to sleep much better.
That's the object of the game, I suppose. Paul Nolte is the Senior Wealth Advisor and Market Strategist for Murphy and Silvest. As always, very interesting. Thank you, Paul.
Thank you, John. We'll talk to you soon.
12:35. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm John Williams. Ashley Byhun's in for producer Pete today. And joining us on the line now is Brad Fulkins. He is the co-founder of something called iAsk.ai. Brad, you're on WGN. How are you?
Good. Good afternoon. How are you doing?
Pretty good. So AI is a domain now, huh? .ai?
That's right. Yeah, we're pioneering a high-accuracy AI-powered answer engine that delivers instant research-backed responses with sources and citations. So we're really kind of leading the way on this entire AI answer engine revolution.
You guys, I understand, have been out there for a year and a half and have 500 million searches already?
Yeah, exactly. We launched early 2023. And it's been growing dramatically. It really seems like a lot of Google users are wanting to do something new. I mean, they've been around now for 20 years. This sort of traditional search engine idea has been around for a long time. And users spend a lot of time trying to click through all the different search results, reading the different pages, and then synthesizing all that information together. So with AI now being at a place where it can really kind of understand and digest content very quickly, we wanted to build a tool that saves users a lot of time from all that search research, and you ask it a question, and then it gives you the answer by scouring all that information in real time.
Saw a number, though, the other day that said that the use of Google versus AI apps like yours is still 400-1, that people still go to Google. But I could see how that number is going to change. But then how is your iAsk.ai app different than all of the other artificial intelligent apps out there? How are you different than ChatGPT or Grok or something else?
Yeah, we weren't really, you know, we had a different vision from those. They are more designed as AI agents. So chatbots, like you interact back and forth with it. iAsk isn't really designed for conversation, but rather as like a question-answer engine. So you ask it a question, and then it gives you an answer of accurate, reference-supported information and singular answers. And this is a lot easier than having to go, you know, argue back and forth with some sort of a chatbot. You know, you want information, you ask a simple question or a detailed question, and then you get an answer right away.
I would imagine this would be valuable to students.
Correct, yeah. Students were really kind of our first big market that started using it. And then we saw researchers, journalists, business professionals have started using it more and more. Investors that are trying to do market research for a particular area. Students are really still kind of our biggest market. They use a lot for homework questions and all sorts of different types of research activity.
I'll talk to you about that in a second. But then what's the response look like? Is it always text or is it audio? Is it video? How does it look?
Yeah, we have a lot of different options. It's mostly text, but we also have audio options and also video. And then below all those content, we show the different sources of information that we retrieve that information from.
Yeah. About students using it, though, what do you say to the either critics or just the curious, the people that are concerned that the kids aren't learning because your app is going to give them the answer?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, we've always looked at technology as a way to enhance human development and productivity. When I was in school, calculators were very limited, and then, you know, there came a point where calculators were more accepted. And it's really a helpful learning tool when you have these extra technology-enabled devices or different types of technology available in those devices like iAsk.ai. And one thing we've actually focused on a lot with iAsk is giving the user an explanation of what's going on. So, for example, if a student asks about a particular homework question, iAsk will explain how it arrived at that answer, and that can be very helpful for students that, for example, might have trouble understanding a particular homework question. They can have basically a tutor right in front of them.
Is it, though, possible, though, that, say, the question was, research how Christopher Columbus discovered America and give me a four-page essay on that. Well, it sounds like your app would provide that for me. I wouldn't have to look up a bunch of articles, read a bunch of articles, synthesize my own idea, come to my own conclusions. Sounds like you would do that for me.
You could create your own article on iAsk.ai, and you can interact with the AI to kind of assist and help you come up with that. So you still need to kind of interact with the AI in order to do something like that. We have a separate tool that you can use to create articles, but the main research tool is really just a research tool. It's going to give you content, but you still have to come up with a paper or something like that. Now, in go ahead.
Are you suggesting, though, Brad, that maybe this is going to be the new kind of learning? Learning used to be get a bunch of magazines, get a bunch of books, and read all of that, synthesize it, write the report. Now it's guide the computer that is doing that for you. And hopefully we retain it. We've imprinted that information in our brains because it'll be useful. Maybe we don't need to know it all. Maybe we'll always just ask the computer for the answer, the same way you may not have to know multiplication tables. But this is a long question. The short version of it is, are you imagining a different kind of learning?
Exactly, yeah. I think learning is going to change over the next several decades. And AI is a tool that comes in many different flavors. You know, we offer research tools and also article or writer building tools. But there's a variety of different language tools that now AI has empowered that make different types of, you know, writing or composition jobs easier.
Are you worried about that, though? Listen, I'm not being critical. I'm being hyper-curious and maybe worried. I don't know enough to be critical, but I think teachers will tell you, parents alike, that they're worried about the way kids are learning, or are they learning, because it's quote-unquote cheating if you ask the computer to write your paper or do your homework.
Yeah, I think anytime a new technology comes out, there's a lot of fear that surrounds it. When cars first came out, people were afraid because they were so used to horses on the road, they had a hard time imagining like what these machines were. And then, of course, you know, calculators and computers themselves, you know, people thought for a long time computers were going to take over right away. I think there's a lot of overblown concern about AI in particular. AI is, you know, not taking over the world anytime soon. We've got a long, long way to go before AI becomes self-aware, for example. But I think these tools are very helpful, and especially in areas of work where there's a lot of mundane activity that you know, for example, if you're writing something, there's a lot of activities that you may not particularly enjoy. Well, AI gives us these tools to do those busy work, and we can focus on the creative work.
Right. So if I was writing about flooding in Illinois, I could look up and spend a lot of time finding the maps and tables that showed floodplains and historical data. I could probably get that in 1 second from iAsk.ai, your app. So I take that point. What about your business model then? Do you charge? Do you have advertising? How will your app make money?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we're the public product is ad supported. So if you go to iask.ai and you use it, you don't have to pay for it. It's ad supported. But if you do want to use the, you know, the tier up of that, you can buy a membership on iask.ai, and then there's no more ads, and you're paying a small monthly membership fee.
What is that? How much?
It's $10 a month for that one.
What about your staff? It's you. Dominic Mazur is your partner. And you're here in Chicago, right? I'm happy to hear somebody's doing something like this in this city. What's your staff like right now?
Yeah, no, we love Chicago. Both of us grew up here, so we're excited to be in Chicago. And yeah, the headquarters is in Chicago. We have a lot of local investors here, and we have a remote but mostly local team that's really committed to growing the Midwest technology scene.
18 months in business now. I'm glad that you must be happy that you got iask.ai. That, as URLs go, that seems about perfect.
Yeah, it really is. And it's been very good in helping our marketing too, because a lot of people, you know, again, as you mentioned, Google is still quite popular. And so people will type in iask.ai or ask AI a question. And so we're really helped with the marketing because the words appear in our name.
Brad Falkins is the co-founder of iask.ai. Hey, Brad, we'll be in touch. It's nice to talk to you.
Thanks a lot. Likewise.
Work Tech Chicago is an event on the global workplace in Chicago this week. And one of the speakers there is Erin McDonald. She is the CEO of Lighting Environment. She's in our studio today. Erin, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Tell me what Lighting Environments does. What's your business?
Well, I actually own three companies, and those three companies create smart buildings and smart workspaces. So Lighting Environments provides the lights. Environments is the integration and smart power company, and Elevated is the software arm of that. And together, we can create an entire smart building infrastructure.
So does that look like I walk into a room, the lights come on automatically, I walk out, the lights go off?
Yeah, it goes a little bit farther than that, though. It's really fine-tuned, where we're using circadian rhythms and tuning with the color of the sun all day so that we are not disrupting our circadian rhythms at night. It's really optimizing the health of the human being and the traffic of the human being inside your real estate. And also, there is a significant amount of energy savings that you can optimize on when you have a smart space.
I've never thought of lighting as holistic. You make it sound like the light environment I'm in during the day will affect my health, happiness, or even how I sleep at night.
It actually will. As a matter of fact, the LED lights of today were never really truly studied before they came out on the market, and they operate with a flicker. And when you take that flicker out of the LED lights, there was a study done by the NIH where the attention span of the children in the classroom was about 67% better. When they took the flicker out. So
if that's imperceptible, that flicker.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And we can't perceive that flicker, but it comes to, it goes back to the reason why, we're here for work tech this week. And it's been really important to that CEOs, really invest in the health of their staff, because we don't realize how much of an impediment it is to our creative mind in a thinking workplace. To have good interiors and environments for the people that inhabit those spaces.
How difficult to sell is that?
It's a difficult sale because, obviously the commercial real estate market is in a little bit of trouble right now. The vacancy rates continue to rise. And, according to McKinsey, there was an estimate that the value of office buildings in major cities could decline by about $800 billion by 2030. So when you're faced with that, you're a commercial real estate owner or CEO of a corporation, you want to consider, do I allow that to happen in my city, or do I invest in the people in my city and buy real estate?
Well, the business – the people holding the leases in Chicago tell me they're trying to get people back into the office, and it's competitive. If you've got a marquee building with a lot of amenities, you've got a better chance than maybe an older building or one that hasn't been retrofitted. It would seem to me like if you're looking for selling points or advantages besides a gym and a chef, this kind of holistic lighting approach would be intriguing, if nothing else, right?
It's more than intriguing. I mean, let's shift to air quality a little bit, too. Air quality is not just a line item on something that you want to check off and tell that you have as an amenity, but it becomes a way to optimize your staff. One piece of particulate matter, 2.5 microns or larger, goes into your lungs. And after that, it spikes a cytokine called interleukin 6. At that point, your brain goes into fight or flight within 90 seconds. So you lose your ability to use your prefrontal cortex. And when you can't do that, you don't have creative thinkers. And that is a strategic asset in a company. And so I imagine a day where CEOs will want to make sure that they have the healthiest workforce.
Oh, I think post-pandemic, and we're past that now, but I think that topic is still ever germane. You sound like a South by Southwest or TED Talk speaker.
I don't think you.
And in fact, I know you have been, yes. And I'm glad you are in town. Erin McDonald, CEO of Lighting Environments. If people want to click on, where do they go?
Yeah, poweredbyelevated.com is our software arm, and in Environments by LE is our smart power integration arm. So thank you for having me.
Enjoy your stay in Chicago. Thanks for coming in. It's 12:58 and the news is next.